Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and on today's show, we'll get some information about the Army's Reserve Officer Training Corps. We'll also learn about the domiciliary care program at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. But first, it is time for Generally Speaking. This is a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Each year from September 15th to October 15th, Americans observe National Hispanic Heritage Month to celebrate the contributions of Americans whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. September is a significant month because it's the anniversary of independence for many Latin American countries. While there is much to celebrate culturally, Hispanic Americans have made countless sacrifices in defense of our nation. During the Spanish-American War, several thousand Hispanic volunteers, mostly from the southwestern United States, fought with distinction in the U.S. Army. Some of these soldiers joined Colonel Theodore Roosevelt's infamous Rough Riders and fought in Cuba. Hispanics continue to fight with distinction throughout both World Wars, Korea, and Vietnam. Their selfless service and dedication to the United States military remain strong today. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, please join me in celebrating and recognizing the exceptional contributions of these Americans, both past and present.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. In the studio with me for the next two segments, we're going to be learning about the Reserve Officer Training Corps program. And joining me are a couple of guests on this segment, and then I'll bring in a couple of new guests the next segment to talk about ROTC. And here with me right now, I've got Lieutenant Colonel John Nguyen, Captain Chadwick Hyder, and Cadet Shua Vang. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to have you in the studio. And, you know, the time's going to go by really fast, and I really want to get to it. So I'll quickly talk to you, Colonel Nguyen, because you gave me very specific instructions that we don't need some 40-year-olds talking to our audience. So you just want to give the overall program, and then we'll let it get turned over to some of the younger crew. But you are the professor of military science out at the University of Minnesota. However, you also host at the U of M campus other colleges like Augsburg, Bethel, St. Kate's, Concordia, St. Paul, Crown, Hamlin, just to name a few. A lot of responsibility. You're an active duty officer, so thank you for your service. But more importantly, sir, what is ROTC?
Yeah, right. So ROTC is the predominant commissioning source for all Army officers. Generally, people know about West Point. They know about the officer candidate school. But it's kind of like the little-known secret that resides at every university across the nation.
And so as a professor of military science, what does that mean? I'm like, what is your responsibility there as it relates to the ROTC program?
Yeah, so my responsibility is more like a program director. There's an element of liaising with the university, and then there's the training aspect of taking more or less high school seniors or lateral college students and turning them into Army officers. So there's a bit of leadership education that we try to develop within these cadets and then take them on their way and send them to their commissioning program, whether it be infantry or artillery or armor basic courses.
And so somebody who joins the ROTC program, we're talking about the U of M, of course, but, you know, whatever college it's at, a person that's in the program, they will come to regular classes, which as a professor of military science, you're providing some instruction to these cadets, I guess we would call them, in just to help them to understand what the military is and what it might mean to be an officer should they decide to commission. Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah, actually, so the course centers around really giving them an introduction to military culture. So there's some physical training aspects that occur throughout the week, but a lot of it is it's low threat, 1 to 2 to 3 hour classes throughout the week, where there will be a kind of like a melting pot of cadets where they learn what we call leadership. So it's leadership labs and lectures that occur throughout the week.
Okay. And Captain Chadwick Hayter, you are also a professor of military science. You're at the University of Minnesota Mankato, but you're in a position where you're also a liaison with the Minnesota National Guard. So what does that mean? I mean, how do you help support this overall mission as a liaison?
Right. It's a great question. Not many people understand what my role really is. So I do work full-time for the Minnesota National Guard, and I'm essentially on loan to Minnesota State University Mankato as an additional hand. So my official role is an APMS, where Colonel Wynn is the PMS. He's the department head. I'm kind of his cadre, if you will. So I'm an assistant professor. So my job there is to support the National Guard and the RTC program simultaneously with whatever those two programs need. Specifically, I take care of what we call the SMP population, the simultaneous member population. We could talk about that maybe a little bit later, but it's the cadets who are also part of ROTC, but also in the Minnesota National Guard. That's what we call a simultaneous member. They can partake in both programs, which maybe not many people know.
Okay, and you, because you mentioned it, we actually have Cadet Vang here, who is a simultaneous membership person because he's also a member of the Minnesota National Guard and also a senior down at Mankato. So, Cadet Vang, welcome, of course, to Minnesota Military Radio. And how are things going for you as a senior now inside of the ROTC program?
Yeah, everything's going great. Being a part of the SMP program has, like, really definitely improved me overall as a person. It's really helped me, I guess, organize things really well, and it's just made me overall, I think, just a much better person than had I not been in ROTC and the SMP.
How long were you serving in the Minnesota National Guard before you joined ROTC?
So I just got assigned my unit last month, so I haven't started actually drilling yet, but I'm starting next month.
Okay, and how long have you been a member of the Minnesota National Guard?
I've been a member of the Minnesota National Guard for about, I'd say, a year now.
Okay. Yep. All right, so some good experiences there as a member of the Guard, and you'll learn as you go through this, you're going to get a unique perspective, you know, rather than going through college, finishing, and becoming an officer in a unit, you're working with and training with soldiers that you potentially are going to end up leading down the road. So what would you say, or let me rephrase that, how did you even find out about the ROTC program? Because as a senior, right, you could have been a member of the Minnesota Guard a long time ago, a senior at Mankato State. So, you know, you kind of delayed that timeline. But what was the thing that led you to ROTC?
So I had always heard of ROTC, like in high school. And I didn't really begin to look at ROTC until I was a sophomore in college. I decided on looking into ROTC because what interested me at first was the benefits from just being in ROTC, and that's initially why I joined. But as I've like progressed in ROTC, the benefits would be the second part. Now it's I really enjoy the camaraderie of it.
I think that's generally what it is, and you know, Captain Hayter, so as the LNO, right, do you get involved with, you know, finding these sophomores in his case and bringing them and saying, hey, have you thought about ROTC? I mean, what kind of involvement do you have with actually filling the program?
Yeah, that's a great question. So me being a simultaneous, I have a heel in both areas. I am an instructor. And so a lot of times the population within an ROTC class, okay, we'll just say a group of sophomores, a little known secret is that anyone, freshman or sophomore, can take an ROTC class with no commitment. Anyone can come and try it out and not have to sign on a dotted line anywhere with any sort of commitment at all. So anyway, when I get in front of those, let's just say those sophomores, if there are students who aren't necessarily in the National Guard yet, we start having those conversations like, hey, what kind of, you know, if someone needs some tuition assistance, like the state offers a great program called State Tuition Reimbursement, Federal Tuition Assistance, benefits as far as like more leadership training, like Cadet Vang was talking about, get in front of a unit soon. He'll be able to start actually realizing what it's like real time to lead soldiers and influence them, because he's going to start shadowing a platoon leader who's already doing that stuff. Not only the platoon leader, but also the platoon sergeant, the most important counterpart that he could possibly have to help mentor him along the way. So these students who enter this program that decide to join both the ROTC and SMP, or excuse me, the National Guard and ROTC, they get a tremendous amount of leadership experience that no one else in college, I guarantee you, outside of some very involved internship, is also getting.
So, Colonel Wynn, I'm going to finish up with you because we have like 35, 40 seconds here in this segment. What is it like for you as an active duty officer running this program to have a Minnesota National Guard LNO? How important is it to your program?
I think it's incredibly important, right? Like, when one of the taglines is we live here, we work here, right? So how can you truly understand the needs of the population here academically, financially, and regionally without having that National Guard liaison? They are able to navigate the school system and the community so effectively that they just bring access and opportunity to our students.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to keep Cadet Vang over for the next segment, and then we're going to bring in one of the civilian recruiters and also a Minnesota National Guard recruiter to talk a little bit more about the ROTC program. Gentlemen, you two, thanks for spending just a couple of minutes with us. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. We're talking about the Army's Reserve Officer Training Corps and the program at the different colleges here in Minnesota. Carrying over from the last segment is Cadet Shua Vang, and then we're going to carry over Captain Chadwick Hyder as well, and then welcoming into the studio this time around is Staff Sergeant Jeremy Gettle. Staff Sergeant Gettle, you are a recruiter for the Minnesota National Guard, but you work out of St. John's, St. Ben, St. Cloud. You kind of got that whole system up there. Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you here. So let me get your perspective, right? So you're not on the podium, but you're recruiting, and your focus is to fill up the ROTC program. Or tell us what your mission is.
Yeah, so I have somewhat of a dual role where I'll meet with college students at St. John's, St. Ben's, or St. Cloud State, talk to them about the ROTC program, and usually if they're interested in the ROTC program, then the National Guard is usually a pretty good fit for them. It's a much smaller population that are already going to college that want to just join the National Guard instead of ROTC. So the majority of them are ROTC first and then the National Guard.
And we were talking in the last segment about how Cadet Vang is a simultaneous membership program member, just joined the Minnesota Guard not too long ago. He's a senior down at Mankato. And I would imagine that there are just some great benefits. Captain Hyder mentioned it briefly, but what are the benefits that you sell to a person who's already enrolled maybe in the ROTC program? It's like, you know what, you might want to consider being an SMP in the Guard as well.
Yeah, so if you're already in the ROTC and you go into the National Guard, tons of benefits. You'll qualify for the state tuition reimbursement, the federal tuition assistance, which is up to $22,000 a year. If you're getting a scholarship from ROTC, you can have your ROTC scholarship converted to pay for room and board, while the Minnesota National Guard covers all of your tuition up to the cost of the University of Minnesota. You get drill pay along with that, so anywhere from $200 to $400 a month, just depending on the drill weekend. And then I think one of the big benefits that maybe a lot of cadets or even SMP cadets don't think about is their accruing time in service. So as soon as you list in the National Guard, your time in service starts. So if you're a freshman and you're an SMP, so you're in the National Guard and ROTC, you'll have 4 years time in service by the time you graduate and commission.
And how does it work with that person who's a member of the Minnesota National Guard? They're also in ROTC. Like, what's the priority for commitment, right? Let's just say that their National Guard unit is getting deployed. What happens?
So if you have a 594, so you're contracted with ROTC, you're non-deployable in the National Guard.
Okay, so your priority is to go through school, get the commission, and then, of course, you become, you know, the asset to the Minnesota Guard and a deployable asset, that is.
Correct.
All right, so Cadet Vang, so you've been ROTC for, what, 2 years, right?
Yep.
And it's obviously been going pretty well. Otherwise, you wouldn't have stayed in. Somebody convinced you that it was a good decision to join the Minnesota Guard along the way about a year ago. So that's good. What or how has this helped you out financially?
Well, I'm a aviation major at the University of Mankato there, and financially it's helped me a lot. Like, I can't even imagine to begin to tell you like how much it's actually helped me with my tuition and just being able to like not financially struggle.
So Captain Hyder, all right, so people are listening right now, and they're like, okay, we're hearing SMP, we're hearing member of the Minnesota Guard, being an ROTC. I imagine you're having these conversations with these sophomores who aren't even a member of the Minnesota Guard yet. But maybe there's somebody out there that is thinking about coming in and taking a class or at least checking it out. You said they can do it without an obligation, but how do they find out about that? What do they do?
Yeah, so if you are, you can be at any university, okay? But you could contact or go on to the Army ROTC website, and through there you can start to filter down to your state, your region, and that will start to present schools to you or around you that offer the Army ROTC program.
Okay, and so anybody who joins the ROTC program, whether or not they're contracted, that doesn't really matter, right? Because that's about the scholarship, right? Or is there a contract, then that means you're going to get commissioned? And if that's the answer, what branch of service? I know Army, but is it Army Reserve, Active Component, Army Guard? What does that look like?
Right. Just to backtrack a little bit. So if they enter in as a freshman or sophomore, there is no commitment whatsoever. By the fall of their junior year, they would then say, if I'm either going to commit to this thing or I'm not going to commit to this
thing.
Okay. So then that's when they, what we say, contract, sign on the dotted line.
Gotcha. Okay? So the contract doesn't mean a scholarship. It means I am promising you that I am going to complete the program and become a commissioned officer in what?
Correct. So the scholarship piece is a whole other discussion, but there is one called the GRFD, or Guaranteed Reserve Forces Duty. So if you have that scholarship, you will have to commission as a guard officer, guard or reserve officer.
Okay.
Up until then, Shua or Vang could go through the program as a National Guard soldier, hit to a senior year commission, and then choose to elect to be released for active duty if he wants to compete for that.
Okay.
As long as his scholarship wasn't that GRFD we talked about.
Right. Okay. And so I imagine the reason why they do that is they're trying to control force structure, right? I mean, we have a demand inside the National Guard to fill an aviation officer, maybe, and if you're committing to do that, they really want you to become an aviation officer. Same with on the active component side. Mm-hmm. And so is that a conversation that, Captain Hyder, you have with these students, or is this a recruiter's conversation to help them decide the best path to go?
Yeah, I think at this point, Sergeant Gettle has done all the great work getting him into the program and maybe a good point of contact, and now it's really up to me and the other professors there to kind of guide them and mentor them into what they're thinking they're doing. So I have a conversation about what is your major? What could you possibly do on the civilian side? Does it make sense to go active duty, maybe experience some life, but you're going to take a big pay cut, right? So we have the conversation of like, okay, you want to go explore the world. That's great for the first 4 years. What does that mean when you come back?
Yeah. And so Cadet Vang, what was that conversation like for you? Did someone seek you out? Did you seek it out? How did you officially or finally say, yeah, I want to do this?
So I found out about ROTC, specifically at Mankato, through the ROTC website there at the Mankato.
And then you just kind of, like, you're looking for other ways in which could help you for your schooling, or did someone like Sergeant Gettle pull you aside and say, hey, you really need to do this. Here are all the benefits.
I had contacted someone from the ROTC program, and then once I talked to them, they sort of just kept reeling me in, and then I eventually was like, yeah, I got to do it. There's too many benefits.
Yeah, no doubt. And so what is one of the hang-ups, Sergeant Gettle, like when you're talking to people, right? What generally is a hang-up that someone needs to overcome or understand better to help them make an educated decision?
I think one of the big things is just what type of people serve in ROTC and serve in the military in general. And as everybody here knows, it's all sorts of people, right? You're going to have super physically fit people that were athletes their whole life. Those are great members. You're going to have people who are super good with computers and technology, We need those people. We're going to have people that are really good working on cars, mechanics. We're going to need those people. So it's people getting past that. Maybe they have a certain perception of what mm-hmm. people in the military is like. And it's all sorts of people. So just kind of breaking that down for them, I think, is the big thing.
So we're running out of time here, but Cadet Vang, what would you tell somebody who's considering the ROTC program?
I would say join, because where I was at once I got out of high school, just as a person overall, I've become like such a, I guess, more organized, better person, take more opportunities. I would just highly recommend it because it's made me such a better person.
Captain Hyder, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing we look for is what we call SAL, Student Athlete Leader. And if you come in with some of those attributes, we're going to definitely magnify them. We're going to turn up that volume button on what you come in with. You're going to leave with exponentially amount more.
Awesome. And Sergeant Ghetto, last thing to you, 15 seconds. If someone wants more information, how do they get a hold of you?
They just give me a call, shoot me a text, 320-438-9323.
And I would imagine nice. The Google machine is a great way to do it too, right?
Absolutely.
ROTC. Awesome. Well, hey, we really appreciate you guys coming in and talking about ROTC. And, you know, I wish we had more time because I think we get into some great, more deep conversations about the program. But this is the way it works in radio, so I appreciate you all stopping in here to Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, thank you for having
us.
Thanks for having
us.
You
bet. This is a time we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we're going to check in on the domiciliary program at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In a moment, we're going to learn about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs domiciliary program. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Brad Lindsay.
September 18th marks the 77th anniversary of the United States Air Force. Its members have consistently excelled in their dedication to execute the Air Force mission of fly, fight, and win. Their commitment is to deliver air power anytime, anywhere in the defense of our nation. The Air Force has over 325,000 active duty personnel, nearly 72,000 reserve personnel, close to 107,000 Air National Guard personnel, and approximately 145,000 civilian personnel. The service flies more than 5,200 manned aircraft. These planes come in the form of some 40 different airframes, ranging from the B-2 stealth bomber to the F-35 jet fighter to the VC-25, which is better known as Air Force One. 19 airmen have been awarded the Medal of Honor. Air Force members provide the air power to deter or defeat our adversaries, reassure our partners and allies, and help diplomacy proceed from a position of strength. Thanks to the United States Air Force for 77 years of service to our nation.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. In the studio from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is Leah Killian-Smith. Leah is a licensed nursing home administrator and was selected to be the Hastings Veterans Home Administrator in 2023. Leah, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Doug. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you for coming into the studio, and you're going to share some great information about the domiciliary program in Hastings. But before we get to that, how about if you just, you know, tell us a little bit about you and kind of your journey to get to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Sure. Well, I've been with the MDVA now for about a year, and before that I spent approximately 5 years doing risk and compliance for the Carmelite Sisters, a healthcare organization that managed and owned 28 homes across the country, independent living, assisted living, and skilled, and that was all during COVID, so it was an interesting time. And before that, I was a consultant for Pathway Health, a local family-owned post-acute care consulting company who provided help when there was maybe issues in healthcare. And so I was a consultant to MDVA, to the healthcare division, for about 10 years. And so I'm familiar with the organization, but now as a state employee, it's been a bit of a learning curve, but it's been a really rewarding experience, and I love the mission, vision, and values of MDVA and serving our veterans.
Yeah, and I bet you all of that experience just really bodes well for what you're now doing as an administrator in a home, because that's a lot of responsibility.
It is, but the veterans are great to work with, and every single day is different, never the same. And our program is so rich with programming outside of just the regular healthcare and medical services that are provided that it's great to go to work every day.
So there are 8 veterans homes in Minnesota that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs manages. And then we have this domiciliary program. What is that?
So the DOMS program is actually the Department of Veterans Affairs' oldest healthcare program. It was established through legislation passed in the late 1860s, and the original purpose back then was to provide a home to disabled volunteer soldiers of the Civil War. It did evolve into a soldier's home to become a living environment for both male and female veterans and their spouses, who may have multiple medical conditions, mental illnesses, or may be in recovery from a chemical use disorder or having other mental health disorders. We are a chemical-free campus, although smoking tobacco is currently allowed outside in designated areas. We're licensed by the Minnesota Department of Health as a boarding care facility, so we are not skilled nursing. We are not certified by CMS, by the feds.
That was what I was going to ask you. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the homes that MDVA manages, skilled nursing homes, but this is not that. This is some very particular care that you're providing.
Yes, most of our care is mental health and sobriety support.
Okay. And are there other things that you do inside of this program that might separate you from the other homes?
There are, definitely. I recently attended a national conference in Florida and got to meet other DOMS administrators. And for the most part around the country, the federal per diem is what they have to work with, which is about $59 a day. In the state of Minnesota, we're blessed to have a state appropriation to help supplement that so we can provide care and services that go far above and beyond just the medical and the psychosocial piece of it. We have an amazing recreation therapy program. Just in the next couple of weeks, we're going to Big Marine on a fishing trip overnight with several veterans, Heroes on Horseback. We just had a salsa making competition in-house with our homegrown program. The guys made their own salsa, and we all, you know, chipped in to take a taste and decide who did the best work. Very integrative as far as the mental health capacity, so that our veterans have the support that they need. One of the things that I didn't realize coming in as a new person into the agency was that a lot of our veterans went into the military because they were drafted and maybe not by choice. Mm-hmm. And so they may have gone into the military already having some mental health challenges. And so recognizing those, also we know that a lot of our younger people, some of those things aren't recognized until they're maybe between 18 and 25 years old, which is when they're going to college, going into the service. A lot of people think that mental health challenges only came from serving, which is not necessarily the case. Some of those diagnoses were already present, and being able to provide that support for them. And we all know that mental health and chemical use a lot of times go hand in hand. So that dual diagnosis presents challenges. And, you know, our biggest hope is that we can make sure that our soldiers have a place to live and that they have care and support and that they're not on the street.
One of the things that you had mentioned is about the per diem that many entities have to work within the $59 a day. And, you know, I think it's important that we recognize the care or the stress of importance that our state legislative, the branch has put in place to give us some of this appropriation and funding so that you can do some more of these things you're talking about, because $59 a day for a resident really isn't going to go very far.
No, it doesn't. And I think that's why in other states, it's basically just room and board with possibly meal prep and 3 meals a day and a place to lay your head. Where here we have a full-time psychologist, we have full-time medical providers on staff, we have full-time ILS workers that will help people.
What's an ILS worker?
Independent living skills.
Okay.
So we have veterans that would like to stay with us short-term to get back on their feet and get back out into the community, and our ILS workers can help them with occupational rehab. The other piece that we have that's unique is we have a vocational rehab program. So we have a full-time vocational rehab counselor, and over 75% of our veterans work at least 20 hours a week, either on campus, off campus, or in jobs that are completely outside of the agency. They make a prevailing wage, and they get to keep that wage. So while there's constraints on personal needs allowance and how, you know, eligibility and benefits go, that helps them increase their income so they can purchase a vehicle. They can do things outside of having $125 a month and enjoy some of the recreational activities that they might if they were living in the community.
So what I'm hearing you describe is that this isn't an old folks home, right? I mean, when we generally think of assisted living or a home, right? It's for elderly people. And I'm not saying they're at end of life, but maybe that's a reality, right? But this is, I mean, is there an age requirement? Are you open to anybody if they're a veteran and they have one of the needs that you offer?
Yes. So our youngest veteran right now is 32.
Okay.
Our oldest veteran will be 101.
Wow.
We do have veterans that have some mobility challenges. We do have rollators and wheelchairs. I would say the average age of our veteran is about 66 right now. And we do provide up to 2 nursing services per day. So we have a wound care specialist, a diabetic specialist, a quality specialist. You know, we do very comprehensive foot care. So those are types of things that we can do in-house that you might not see in even an assisted living environment. So
what's the average length of stay then, do you think?
10 years.
10 years, okay. And then over that 10 years, and I want to make sure we get to it, and we won't have time in this segment, but I want you to be able to identify the 3 paths that you talk about, because I think it's important to share that information too as people are obviously exploring different options to get the care that they need wherever they're at.
And when we talk about that, the most DOMS programs have an 18-month stay limit. So it's kind of you get to come in for 18 months and then you're back out again, whether you have a viable living situation or not, which is not the case with us. And we can talk about that in the 3 paths.
Another unique aspect from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. We are going to take a quick break here and then we'll come back. We'll continue talking with Leah about the domiciliary care down in Hastings. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In the studio with me is Leah Killian-Smith. Leah is the Veterans Home Administrator in Hastings. And Leah, before we went into break, we kind of talked a little bit about we want to hear more about the paths. So if you could describe what those 3 paths are as it relates to the domiciliary care.
I'd love to. So we have 3 paths that our veterans can be on in our program. The first one is the Earth Path. And really, the Earth Path is to ensure all veterans who are aging in place get the most out of their life. So a meaningful life while they age in place with us until they should need a higher level of care, which typically would be either assisted living or nursing home care. There are supportive services to promote continued stability to ensure successful outcomes in their endeavors and to make sure that we provide a safe environment where veterans can maintain their quality of life. And also to enhance the holistic well-being by encouraging a balanced and healthy lifestyle. Part of that healthy lifestyle, obviously, is nutrition and exercise. We have a full-time dietitian and we have a full-time fitness trainer. So we have guys that have their own personal fitness trainer, which is really great. On the fire path is really to support a veteran who wants to return to living successfully and independently in the community, while working with them to achieve their personal goals of independence and self-sufficiency. So that could be money management, finding a place to live, purchasing a vehicle, getting a job, all those different pieces. We can help the veterans with that. And we'll see a veteran stay with us for maybe 18 months to 2 years while that process allows them to save money, work with us on our campus and earn some money, figure out how to work time cards, time sheets, be responsible, get up on time and go to work, kind of some of the basic things that I think we all take for granted that can be a recovery journey for a lot of our veterans. And then the water path is really us helping to maintain sobriety. So I would say probably at least probably half to two-thirds of our veterans come to us in recovery. We do like to see a period of recovery before they join us because we are an independent living environment, and so we're not a locked facility. We're not a treatment center, but we do have smart recovery. We take people to AA. We have a full-time CD counselor on staff. Our psychologist works with people. We have LICSWs on staff, which is not the norm, so they can provide therapeutic interventions for residents. We work on coping skills and what things trigger them. And they know to reach out to us when they're struggling and they need support. We do have a relapse now and again, but we manage those really well, and our veterans are kept safe. And so just because someone is in recovery doesn't mean they can't come to our program, and it's important for, I think, the public to know that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I was going to make a joke, but I won't do it because I was thinking you're going to go down the earth, wind, and fire path. And then I was going to ask about the music that you play, if it's always earth, wind, and fire. But I guess that one just isn't going to work for us.
Well, we do have an in-house band.
Oh, see, there you go.
We do.
Well, that's awesome. And I'm sure they play some music by them as well.
Yeah.
So you're talking about these programs, and you'd mentioned the overnight program that you're going to do. You said that in the last segment. And I would imagine that it's important because you can't do all of this stuff in-house. You have to have relationships with other community partners, people out in that community that really want to support our veterans and the work that you're all doing. So maybe you can just talk a little bit about some of those relationships, and then what are you looking for? Is there still room for more relationships of community partners?
So we have a healthy volunteer base. We have people that come in and help us in our distribution room. A lot of our veterans come with maybe the clothes on their back. So we're able to provide clothing, sundries, toiletries. Those are all donated. They're either donated by, say, VFW Auxiliaries, Legion. Our CVSOs are very, very involved with our programming, and we have a designated fund that has a healthy balance, which is great, and we're able to do things for the veterans that we probably wouldn't be able to do, you know, in the private sector, utilizing those funds, such as, you know, activities, our rec room. We've got pinball machines, dart boards, pool tournaments, shuffleboard, just about anything you could think of. Short of a bowling alley, we're really, really fortunate to
have. Is that in the works?
And that's actually in place already. The bowling alley, no, I'm not so sure we're going to get a bowling alley out of our new project, but would be nice. But you know, there's so much going on, and we have 120,000 acres sitting in the middle of Hastings for our Hastings campus, which is just beautiful. We have wildlife on campus all day, every day. We have, I think, 40 gardens now where we pull in over 1,000 pounds of produce every year, and we eat that. Our residents eat that. Our staff eat that in the kitchen. So they're very, very active on campus. We also have a 50-bed domiciliary on the Minneapolis Skilled campus as well.
Okay, so you're not just isolated to Hastings. You've got another one that you're caring for.
Yes.
And you have oversight of that as well.
Yes.
So you mentioned volunteers, and you mentioned donations. I'm assuming that there's always room for more volunteers, and of course, you're always willing to accept more donations.
Yes, for sure.
And
it helps us provide things like Chanhassen theater tickets, musicals, Vikings games, Twins games, some of the bigger ticket items that maybe wouldn't fit within a normal DOMS budget.
And so if we directed people to minnesotaveteran.org/homes, would they get information there about how to, one, apply for to be a resident, but then two, donations and volunteer opportunities?
Yes.
Awesome. So you had mentioned new project, and I would like to know if you could tell us a little bit about what future construction looks like.
So the domiciliary building in Hastings is over 100 years old. It's an old state hospital, and that brings a lot of challenges to the physical plant, of course. It's also dorm-style living. So we have shared bathrooms, shared showers, a lot of shared rooms. We did receive the state funding to actually build a new campus in Hastings, and we're waiting for the priority list to come out from the federal VA. And if we receive that funding, we could begin construction within probably 24 months. And so the design process is almost complete. We would have 145 private veteran rooms with their own bathrooms, their own showers, much more appealing living environment to somebody who wants to be independent.
And so would the plan be then to, obviously it's a new build, up to date, new technology stuff, but then does the old building, do you wipe that out and use that for something down the road again? Do you have plans on what you do with that space?
We do. The beauty of this project is our campus is large enough that we can build behind the current building without displacing any veterans. So we can watch the whole project be built, and then they can tear down the old structure, and we can move in. So it should be a fairly seamless process without having to move people out of the program and back in again.
Will this impact your garden?
Yes. Hopefully we'll have more gardens.
Okay.
Bigger gardens. Yes.
But you'll still be able to do some gardening while the project is going on, because I saw the newscast when they did, I forget what news channel was down there, but had a great story about the people out there working and doing the stuff to get the food that they're cooking in the kitchen.
It's pretty amazing. We had 3 veterans that sort of spearheaded that in the beginning, and now we have over 25 veterans that are working the homegrown program.
Yeah, so real quick here, who is eligible?
A veteran that has been honorably discharged from any branch of the military or their spouse and or their spouse. And we look at people's income. And if people have no income, we can work with that. If they have a mediocre income, we can work with that. Or if they're full cost of care, we can work with that also.
All right. MinnesotaVeteran.org/homes is the place to go. Leah, thanks so much for coming in and sharing a little bit about the domiciliary program. Appreciate what you're doing down there and appreciate your service to taking care of our veterans.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Before we close out today's show, I'd like to say thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. We strive to bring you quality content each week and look forward to hearing your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please go to Minnesota Military Radio, click on Contact Us, and then send us your thoughts. Be sure to join us next week when we check in with the Minneapolis VA healthcare system and we'll hear from our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week. And you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.